The Mexico Grand Prix lacked excitement, but it did provide another Max Verstappen victory as the Dutchman broke multiple records this past weekend. The fight for second in the Constructors' Championship is coming down to the wire as Mercedes impressed and Ferrari fell short. Fernando Alonso continues to throw shade, and will we see a race in Colombia come 2024? All this and more on Unlapped.
I think it's well worth breaching the cap if that's your punishment.
You know, what was he meant to do? Like, give Lewis a championship? So,
just pull over and say, Lewis, it's yours, mate.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
no thanks.
The more of these races you get, you look at the calendar, you're like, where are these going to go?
Nate, a bulldog right
now. Yeah, I'm handing in my Ferrari membership, my Ferrari fan club membership card. This season has just done me in.
Welcome to Unlapped, an ESPN F1 show. I'm Katie George, he's Lawrence Edmondson, and that's Nate Saunders. Nate, welcome back. Are you well and rested?
I am, yeah. Thanks for letting me have some time off to sleep last week, guys. Appreciate it.
You did that all retrospectively. Lawrence called it. He knew immediately.
Yeah, he knows me too well. He was like, we haven't heard from Nate for 5 minutes. He's definitely sleeping.
I've also been there with a jet lag. So to give people context, Nate flew back from Austin to the UK, and that jet lag is a killer. Yeah. So it can kind of, it wakes you up in the morning, but it also kind of takes you out at night sometimes.
Because you land at 9 and you're like, I've got to stay awake until at least 9 p.m., maybe later. And I have a very comfy sofa in my living room. So as soon as I sat on that, I was just, my eyes were gone. I was like the gif of that baby slowly falling asleep. And I was just out of it. So, but yeah, much, much, much better this week.
Thank no you. Worries. I'm glad to hear it. Speaking of jet lag, Lawrence, how are you doing?
I'm okay. Cold more than anything else. It turns out the UK in November is much colder than Mexico. Who knew? But it's nice to be back. I've been away for about 5 weeks traveling, and it's been fun. But yeah, it's actually quite nice to get back home and just do normal things for a little bit.
Now in the UK, do you guys call a sweater a jumper? Is that
That is true. Yeah, we do call jumpers. I was wearing my Icelandic jumper earlier today, which is like this Icelandic wool one because it's so cold and I haven't yet turned up the heating in my house. But it hasn't made a debut on the podcast. Maybe next week.
I dig it. You both look great. It's good to be with you guys. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment on what you want to see more of. And don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's hit some news. Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Biggest news coming out of the weekend certainly was Red Bull's cost cap penalty. They have now been fined $7 million and have been hit with a 10% reduction of the aerodynamic testing allowance it's entitled for the 2023 F1 season for breaking the budget cap back in 2021. When you heard the penalty, just initial reaction, initial thoughts.
It was kind of what we were expecting because we knew there was going to be a financial element and we knew there was going to be a hit in aerodynamic testing. We just didn't know how much. And it's really hard to say whether it's a fair penalty or not, because unless you're an aerodynamicist, it's quite hard to know what 10% of an already reduced amount, because Red Bull are the champions, therefore they have less testing available to them than second place, even less than third place. But to give it some perspective, it's around kind of the difference between finishing first in the championship and finishing between second and third in the championship. They've lost again. So they will have significantly less than their main rivals, Mercedes and Ferrari, going into next year. They claim as much, it's going to cost them as much as 0.25 and half a second of lap time. That number seems to be quite out of whack when you turn to other, talk to other engineers. They're all saying, okay, no, that's not the case. It's much closer to 0.1 second probably per lap. And the other thing is that it's almost like the big gains you're going to make from your aero testing come early on. So then the big concept ideas, and then your kind of 10% at the end, one engineer referred to it as the nice to haves, like the little bits that you'll tweak and change that will bring performance, of course, but they're not going to bring masses of performance. So it's a hard one. But then you've also got to look at, you know, what did they actually do? How much did they overspend? And we got the details through on that. And compared to what they said they spent to what they actually spent, the difference was £5.6 million, which is huge. But they also felt that they were under the budget cap by £3.8 million, which means they overspent by £1.8 million, which is 1.6% of the $145 million, sorry for the confusion in rates, but that's just the way it all came out from the FIA, cap at the end of it. So, you know, a 1.6% overspend, it's, again, hard to quantify exactly what that would be. But there's lots of people that believe last year, considering how tight that championship was, that is enough to bring performance to the car that could have made a big, big difference. Then there's also this tax credit that's involved. That's £1.4 million. You minus that and you get down to £400,000, 0.37% overspend. And then you're looking at, well, it's still a little bit, you know, again, it was so tight last year. Maybe that was enough to push it over the edge. I think Mercedes internally seem to think that's the case. So, you know, what have you got? It's a penalty. It was a very transparent process. All those stats I've just given to you, all those numbers, all came from the FIA. You know, they revealed everything that they could without giving the exact details of the accounts of Red Bull. It's an interesting kind of resolution, and one which I think is probably just about right. But, you know, in the paddock, you'll find lots of people that are saying the FIA haven't gone far enough. You'll find Red Bull saying they've gone way too far. Christian Horner called the penalty draconian. So it's usually a case when everyone's a little bit upset, you've probably got the right answer. But it's an interesting one. And the big question is whether it deters people from doing it in the future. And that will be interesting to see, because, you know, if you are really close to a championship, if it's as tight as it was last year, you know, a little overspend is only going to lose you 10% down the road, you might consider that worthwhile.
Yeah, I think the deterrent thing is the interesting thing going forward now, because that was always going to be, I think, where the FIA had to come down on this. And Toto Wolff said, it's interesting, I think Toto Wolff's kind of last 4 weeks on this has been quite interesting, because he went from in Singapore saying one team's made a major overspend and it was very, very kind of punchy about it, and then rein that in a bit. You know, people said, where, you know, how would you know that, etc., which is interesting. You know, Red Bull were quite frustrated by that, but he said didn't he, that the reputational damage that Red Bull's kind of suffered at this point is going to be bigger for them than anything else. So I think that's true to a degree, because all of the coverage leading up to it was, you know, they're guilty, and it wasn't really, it was before people even knew the amount. So I think that was quite interesting how that went down. So I can understand some of the frustration on Red Bull's part, but ultimately nine teams all spent within it. Aston Martin had a procedural breach in it as well, which effectively just means they filled out a spreadsheet slightly incorrectly when they handed that in. But crazy process. I mean, Lawrence and I were kind of digging into this when we were in Austin, and absolutely just insane, you know, the scale of the audit that's gone into this. And I think one thing that F1 needs from this to follow is, A, this has to be quicker going forward. I think the FIA has realized what a mammoth task that is. You can't be in October the following year and be discussing the budget cap the year before. And that's not, I think Lawrence is right. From everyone we spoke to, the FIA has actually come out of this pretty well in terms of the transparency of the process, which, you know, it's not often we talk positively about the FIA this season. So, you know, credit where it's due there. I think that they've realized they need to, A, like, make the process quicker if they can. And now we have at least a bit of precedent there about the penalties. But to go to what Lawrence said at the end of his bit there, I think some of our rivals want to burn our wind tunnel down, which was just a great quote. I think it seemed fair. And it's difficult because most people were talking for weeks and weeks and months and months, championships are going to go, points are going to go. And that actually, in reality, was never really that realistic. And so I think it took a life of its own on Twitter a little bit. People were like, oh, Red Bull are going to have all these things taken. Yeah. And really, you know, when we were talking to people there, it was like, no, it's going to be Sporting, but it will be a future-facing penalty. So yeah, like Lawrence said, what we expected. And to be honest with you, I'm quite glad it's over with, because it was just 4 weeks of, you know, absolutely, I was just so glad when they released it. I was like, right, we can talk about this properly now and, you know, move on from it, because it just become a bit of a, you know, sour talking point, I think.
Here's the other thing, just briefly while we're talking about the deterrent as well, is that the FIA statement said that Red Bull didn't act in bad faith, dishonestly, or in a fraudulent manner. So they took that into account with the penalty. So if another team looks at it and they're like, oh, well, we can overspend by 1.6 million and 1.6%, and we'll get away with it with just a 10% reduction. Well, that's not necessarily the case, because if the FIA then looks into it and realize that they spent in ways which they clearly knew they were going to get an advantage, that's a key factor in the penalty that's going to come out the other end. So I think that element was key, and you know, that is, I think that's part of the FIA investigation. And what they found was that while Red Bull were, and by this is in Christian Horner's own words, aggressive with some of the ways they accounted for spending last year, it wasn't necessarily dishonest. I think, you know, they were pushing up to the boundaries, but without necessarily the intent to completely blow the boundaries away or find a way around it. So it's still a really difficult, you know, even with all this information we got from the FIA, it's really still difficult to come to a judgment without being a forensic accountant and having everything there and knowing exactly why certain decisions were made. But Christian Horner did a press conference in Mexico that I attended. It went on for 50 minutes, and he went through all the different points, from the catering to the sick pay. There's a number of things which Red Bull were putting out there as reasons why they went over this cap. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's cleared up a lot. But what will be fascinating is what happens for this year. Because, of course, Red Bull, if they believe they were right in all of the ways they were kind of incorrectly accounting last year, well, presumably they've been doing that already up to now in the 2022 season. So if we then get to the end of this year, we may well find that in a year where budgets have been even tighter, not just because the budget cap's come down, but also because of inflation, rising energy costs, if we then find out that Red Bull have gone over again,
then you're a repeat offender.
Because you're a repeat offender, but they didn't know a lot of these things were going to be accounted differently until now. So there's, you know, that's another fascinating thing to get head around. And then also, if they come in underneath, well, that suggests that maybe they did slightly tailor some of the way they were accounting stuff, and then perhaps knew last year they weren't. So it's, yeah, there's a lot going on. It's not over yet. You know, these regulations are still pretty new. They're actually getting tighter, as I just mentioned. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what comes out next year and whether maybe there's more than one team who have breached it. But, yeah, we'll have to wait, sadly, until, as Nate just said, probably September, October next year to find out. It's just absurd, isn't it? But anyway,
it's going to become like the annual October talking point, isn't it? The budget cap. It's just going to be one of those things. Just quickly to round off the point, one team boss told me in the lead up to Austin, so I think there are some suspicions about overspends again. One team boss said one thing the FIA needs to do is have, you know, punishments escalate if you're a repeat offender, yes, and, you know, have suspended sentences then and stuff like that. So I think you're getting to a point now where, you know, if there's that push from other teams, I think they've almost realized, I don't want to put words into any team boss's mouth, but you get a sense that some of them might be feeling like this is potentially like a got your moment for Red Bull. Like, if you have offended again, we can really kind of get the FIA to punish you a lot down the line. So we'll see.
Yeah, almost like a sliding scale. It would be more severe. And I think we can agree the $7 million fine isn't as big of a deal as a 10% reduction of the aerodynamic testing. And I'm just curious, Lawrence, real quick, without going too deep in the weeds, for those who don't understand the aerodynamic testing, you know, what is that process? What is that structure set up like?
Okay, so the majority of performance in a Formula One car comes from the aerodynamics. So it's incredibly important that teams research into how to make the fastest car, both in terms of downforce and also making it fast in a straight line, reducing drag. And so the two key tools for doing that is the wind tunnel, which is they put a scale model, 60% model in a wind tunnel, and they learn from that how the air is moving around it and whether they can add more downforce. They have sensors on it that can learn from that. And then they also have CFD, which allows them to do it basically with, simulate it on computers and and learn about stuff and kind of build new ideas. And the CFD is very rapid because you can build something without having to actually make the model and get an answer. And then the wind tunnel is usually used to verify it. And then you have your third way of kind of understanding how the car works, and that's actually running it on track. So you have those three things. The better they correlate, the more they all agree with each other, the more likely you are to find performance. And of course, the more time you have to play with the CFD and to play with the wind tunnel, the more ideas you can explore. And that has been limited for some time because there was a stage when teams were basically running their wind tunnels constantly and it just became very, very expensive. And also it just meant teams with the best wind tunnels would just disappear into the distance. So the FIA for a while have been clamping down on it. And then it was, I think, a couple of years ago, they introduced this scaled, I don't know, it's often been referred to in the same way as a kind of almost like a draft pick. So the worse you are the previous year, the more time you get in your winter. So it's more like you get your pick of the best players. Well, in this case, you get your extra time in the wind tunnel and with CFD to kind of bring you higher up. Meanwhile, the teams that finish at the top have less time and therefore, in a way, a handicap to some extent. Of course, it's not quite as simple as that because it depends how good your CFD and wind tunnel tools are. The more efficient they are in getting it right, the more performance you'll get. So even a team like Red Bull with a reduced amount may still be able to come up with more, you know, better solutions and bigger gains than a team running towards the back of the grid that's relying on a third-hand wind tunnel, you know, using somebody else's wind tunnel and CFD tools that are a little bit out of date. So it's... It's a good one, and it's a good rule in F1, I think, this scaling thing, because it should over time level things out. And the idea being is that they're just going to slightly chop what Red Bull have got already.
Interesting. So fascinating. Well, Red Bull also wasn't just in the news for the penalty that came down finally and the reaction there. They boycotted certain media outlets in talking with certain media members, and that happened to be Sky Sports while they were down in Mexico. And so I'm just curious, from your all's vantage point, was this a long time coming in the way that maybe Red Bull felt like Sky has treated Max Verstappen over time? Or was this maybe a convenient classic case of deflection that you're in the news for the wrong reasons, and now you're going to put the onus back on, you know, a media member or a media outlet?
I think it's a good case of both of those things, actually. I think the deflection is certainly true as well. It does seem like a convenient time to boycott the media. There was it was never really said by Red Bull. They never really named who it was, but everybody reported it as Ted Kravitz, so from Sky. But and the thing is that Ted obviously does his notebook show, very, very popular on Sky, and had talked about, in his Austin show, had talked about Lewis being robbed of the championship. He was basically saying what a Hollywood script it would have been if Lewis had been able to pass Max, you know, the guy who won the race where he was robbed last year. Now, I think robbed is used by British people a lot differently to how it might be used. You know, we, like, for every 2 years, the English football team is robbed, for example. We just say it all the time. It's just the way we, do sports. Okay. But I have heard through the year that there've been some frustrations at certain coverage of Max, and so this all really stems around Abu Dhabi. You know, it's been kind of the thing that just never goes away for Red Bull, and I'm sure Lawrence will attest to this as well. One of the things that I've got from Red Bull is they're quite baffled about how people still talk about that. You know, I think they're just like, well, you know, Max won it on the day, and for everyone else it's like, yeah, but you know, it wasn't. The frustrating thing about last year was that Max really didn't do anything wrong. Red Bull didn't really do anything wrong at that end, it shouldn't have gone down at all because of the way it was implemented. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't care, you know, if it had been the other way around, Christian Horner, I think, would still be talking today about Lewis Hamilton's eighth championship not being worthy. I think that would have been the case. So I think it's a valued talking point. And I think that they felt that the way Sky was dealing with that was disrespectful. I've certainly heard from that. But this stems, I mean, we can go back to even before Abu Dhabi. I remember they were frustrated by Sky Sports spent a lot of that week beforehand, as did a lot of the media, talking about, is Max going to win this championship by driving Lewis off the track? And they were appalled by that at the time. They were so annoyed by it. And to be honest with you, you can kind of understand why. They both collided during that season, but it was quite an outrageous thing to suggest. And not to throw, like, I love the Autosport publication. It's one of the reasons I'm a F1 journalist, because I used to read it as a kid. But they published an open letter that morning of that race, basically pleading with Max, like, don't drive Lewis off the track. And I spoke to somebody at Red Bull in Austin, and they referenced that letter. They said, you know, this has been going on for ages. It's been going on since that letter, since everything before Abu Dhabi, you know, after Silverstone. They felt that that was 100% Lewis's fault. And everybody kind of was like, well, it was 50-50. So I think this has been simmering away for a while, but probably the timing of it meant that they were like, let's boycott now. But to be honest with you, I think that that does a disservice to Max, because I don't think Max thinks in that way. Red Bull collectively following him, I think they were like, this is a good opportunity to rally around Max and to kind of, it's like battening down the hatches, isn't it? It's like, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. But I think Max just, you know, he is his own person. He did this with Netflix. So I think from his perspective, I don't think Max sits there and thinks, if I do this, I'll stop talking about the budget cap. Because as far as he's concerned, he's a two-time world champion. He doesn't care about either of those things happening.
Sure.
And I mean that in the sense of he doesn't see them as anything to do with him. And I think that that's probably fair as well. You know, if you're a driver, you get in the car, you drive it, you win races, you win championships. So I think it's a bit of both, but this definitely at Red Bull has been simmering away, bubbling away. And, you know, sometimes I've a lot of people at Red Bull, and I think sometimes the perception is that Lewis, especially from the British speaking media, kind of gets the better treatment. And that might be true. You know, Sky is a British broadcaster after all. So I don't know. I disagree that it's been massively slanted towards Lewis, but I can kind of see some of where Red Bull's come from here. And ultimately, as a journalist, I thought it was a great story. I just was like, you know, it's always great when somebody boycotts anything, because it gives us something to talk about. Ironically, it gives us something to talk about when somebody doesn't talk to somebody else. But yeah, there's lots to it. And this Red Bull didn't just pluck this out of a hat, but I think that, yeah, certainly it helped them, because we came out of the weekend not talking about the budget cap and talking about Sky and Max, etc.
Lawrence, what was kind of the feeling and mood you got on the ground?
Well, the funny thing about being on the ground is that you don't get to see the Sky coverage. So I haven't actually seen the offending piece of TV reporting. But yeah, it became apparent on the Saturday, which was the day after we'd learned about the budget cap stuff, that Max wasn't talking to Sky Sports. And I think it included Sky Italia and Sky Germany as well. So, you know, big markets. You know, Max was very clear about it in the press conference after the race when he was asked about it. You know, just won a race, and most of the questions were on that subject. But there was one, I think, fairly and understandably about that. And, you know, he is genuinely upset. He said, you know, it's just this constant kind of picking away, he feels, you know, at his success and at his championship. And you can understand why someone who's devoted as much as he had, you know, as a driver. Again, as Nate said last year, you know, you can have all your opinions about what happened in Abu Dhabi, but Max didn't actually do anything wrong. He just got the opportunity presented to him by a decision made by FIA race director Michael Massey, and he took it. You know, what was he meant to do? Like, give Lewis a championship? So
just pull over and say, Lewis, it's yours, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
no thanks.
I don't agree with what Michael Massey's just done. I'm going to park my car. So it's a tricky one. And also Max, I think, you know, he's such a pure racer that he, I think, often just focuses entirely on that. And when there's this, you know, bigger picture stuff and things, he'll often duck out of it. But on this one, he just wanted to have his say and decided that the best way to do it was not to talk to Sky. And apparently it's a one race thing, you know, and that they'll be talking again in Brazil. So we'll have to see what happens. But it's interesting because I also didn't get to watch a lot of the other broadcasts, and I wouldn't understand them because most of them are in other languages, but it would be interesting to know what the Dutch the Dutch coverage is like, whether that's very pro-Max, anti-Lewis. I suspect it might be, but anyway, you know, it'd be interesting to know how far out of whack the Sky Sports version is compared to some of the other ones.
I think the point about the Dutch media is interesting as well. So I spoke to one of the Dutch journalists, Eric Van Haren, who is really close with Max and actually breaks a lot of news around the Verstappen camp. You know, really, really good journalist. And we were talking about this on the Sunday morning. We were both on European time and everyone else was, I think, waking up to this story. So we were just having a quick chat about it. And he said, he's like, I totally get how media bias can form, because the Dutch media a lot of the reason there's that interest in the Netherlands is because of Max. And so it's natural that they will interview him. And it's a Dutch speaking thing. He's, you know, there's obviously Nick de Vries coming in next year, but there's only one person in that paddock who drives who speaks Dutch. So it makes a lot of sense. So I think that there is that part of it as well. But just to go back to the Abu Dhabi point and the wider point of this, I think the issue we've got to generally with social media, and this isn't just Formula One, but Formula One exemplifies it, is everyone is so entrenched in their camps now, aren't they? There's just no middle ground in terms of talking to people now. And the funny thing is, if you went back, I kind of referenced it earlier, if you flip those situations around, you'd have Lewis fans right now being like, Matt, you know, Lewis is our worthy 8-time world champion. You know, he's the GOAT. You Red Bull guys are just crybabies, etc. And you'd have Red Bull saying, no, you know, it wasn't fair what happened last year. And there would be no middle ground in it at all, because they're like, I'm defending my guy. And I just think the whole thing, one thing that Verstappen said is, you know, if you're spreading negativity on social media, he doesn't want to be any part of it. And I think there's something to that. So I did actually quite respect him taking that stand. Interesting that it's only one race, because there was a suggestion that it was just indefinite. Obviously, he gave Netflix the silent treatment for, you know, a whole year and a half, which he's now kind of reversed as well. But again, this is what I quite respect about Max is, you know, he did that with Netflix, spoke to Netflix, spoke to Formula One and said, you know, if you want me back on, you know, you don't have to pander to me, but I just want you to be a bit more honest about my portrayal. That was all he asked for. So, and it sounds like he's got that. So, like I said, it gave us something to talk about. And it will be interesting to see the first time Ted Kravitz gets to ask Max a question or talk about Max. I don't know whether he'll be super glowing to him or whether he'll be like looking around to make sure Red Bull aren't around, but I think it'll blow over. You know, this is one of the issues with race after race after race. It's just constant media, constant attention. So yeah, I think everyone needs the off season just to go and chill out in a quiet, dark room somewhere.
And this does happen as a journalist. You'll write something or, you know, you'll report something and it's not going to please everyone. You know, the best stories don't tend to do that. So, you know, you do get into situations where you have kind of quite uncomfortable conversations with press officers and so on, and you have to explain, you know, why this story is the way it is and or why an opinion has been taken. So it's not that unusual. And I think Nate's right about Max. The other thing is that, you know, he does tend to forgive. Like he won't hold a grudge indefinitely. And I quite like that about him. He's kind of very matter of fact. It's like, right now, you know, I don't agree with what you're saying. I'm not going to talk to you, but I'll give you another chance. And so, I'm sure this will all blow over.
But I do think it's a unique part about this sport. And it's not just, you know, Max being outspoken about the media and his mistreatment or what he deems as mistreatment. I mean, this sport, people wear emotions on their sleeves. And when a manager or a team principal is not happy about something, I mean, when they sit them right next to each other, I mean, some of those team principals go at it. You know, drivers take shots at one another through the media, more so than I think I'm accustomed to maybe seeing in American sports. It certainly exists, but I don't think that sometimes athletes in the States are as outward or are willing to take a shot, which I think entices you as a fan, right? I mean, it's highly entertaining for better or worse, but I do think that this sport, people are fine wearing their emotions on their sleeves, which I enjoy as a consumer, certainly.
I think that's one of the big appeals of the Netflix series. So we saw that, you know, we really got to see behind the scenes exactly how drivers react when the journalists aren't there. Okay, the cameras were still rolling, the Netflix cameras, but they weren't quite as intrusive as the cameras that they normally face. And then the other thing is Christian Horner's whole, the way he's dealt with the budget cap saga is that he's tried to make Red Bull the victims on a number of occasions, you know, saying everybody else is labeling us cheats when we're not and all this kind of stuff. And then you have to go back to the central. You're like, well, if Red Bull hadn't overspent, whether you believe that's cheating or not, but if Red Bull hadn't overspent, we wouldn't be talking about this in the first place. So sometimes you do need to stand back a bit, take a reality check of what is being said, not get drawn into the narratives because they can be very convincing. And just stand back and remember, one, it's a sport. And two, that, you know, you can have an opinion and it's probably going to fall somewhere in between all these very extreme opinions from these very motivated and competitive teams.
Nate, you reminded me, you mentioned Nick de Vries. I'm just curious, where is Haas and Hulkenberg at this point in their deal? Closer, far?
So it seems not as close as people might think. I was told that we won't have anything before Brazil as it stands. And I think that that really speaks to the fact that they're just taking their time on this now. They've got no rush. There's no other seats up for grabs. You know, we know where everyone else is driving. And so I think they can just take their time on it. And I think that to Haas's credit, they've tried to give Mick as much time as possible to kind of prove whether or not he needs, you know, whether he is worth that seat or not. And I think I quite respect that. So if they do get rid of Mick, if that is the outcome, I don't think he can turn around and complain. You know, even though this has been hanging over his head, it's like it's been in your court this whole time. And there have been ups and downs. And I think that I think things behind the scenes there are a bit better. There were some frustrations and tensions earlier in the year. So it's interesting. I think they're still leaning towards Hülkenberg, which, you know, people have mixed opinions on. I would like, if it was a choice for me, I'd stick with Mick. I think a younger driver would be great. But I think Hulk just gives them that reliable, you know, known quantity. But I don't think it's definitely not a cert yet. So, you know, hopefully they give Mick. Brazil would be, you know, I always associate Brazil's one of those circuits you always associate with Michael Schumacher, just some of his great performances there. So, you know, hopefully Mick can kind of find some magic if they do give him Brazil as well. Sprint race weekend, you know, you've got two chances to be spectacular in a race. So we'll see. But yeah, it looks like Hülkenberg, I'd say 60-40 right now, leaning towards him.
This should come as no surprise, but the Vegas Amex tickets sold out instantly. Everybody was clamoring for tickets. Obviously, Formula One is as popular as ever here in the United States. But there have been talks that we could possibly see an F1 race in Colombia in 2024. What do you guys think of that?
I mean, I'm all in. I'd love to go to Colombia. First, from a purely selfish perspective, let's do it. Let's just.
Lawrence is like, I've been gone for 5 weeks, so let me get back to you on that.
I'd happily add Colombia, especially as at the moment we've only got one race in South America in Brazil. So to add Colombia there, it looks like Barranquilla, I think, I hope I mispronounced that, is the venue they're looking at, which is on the Caribbean coast. So yeah, so cool. that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? We get these announcements every now and again that various places are looking or keen to hold a race. And of course, there are lots of places that are very keen to hold a Formula One race, especially right now. But the money is important. And the mayor said, there's still a lot of work to be done, which I took a shorthand for. You know, we're still a long way from getting a deal over the line. But there are reports that Stefano Domenicali's gone there. F1 haven't kind of gone out of their way to deny that. So I think it's a possibility. I also heard in Mexico from the promoters of the race there, they actually look over the Foro Sol Stadium there, which has a huge amount of music venues, and they are a much bigger promoter beyond just the Formula One race. And they were saying, well, you know what, if there's more interest of a race, you know, in the South America, Central America region, let us know, because we're good promoters. We know how to put on a race. Maybe we can get involved and help things happen. So, yeah, there was a few little rumors kind of floating around that there's a possibility of more races, South America, Central America, who knows. But and something more around there, I think, would be really good for the sport. And for people watching the US, another race on a friendly time zone. So that's always good.
It's kind of it's great that there's this interest, but it comes back to that point, doesn't it, that we've talked about before, of the more of these races you get, you look at the calendar and you're like, where are these going to go? And
sustainable?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's difficult because you don't want to be someone that says we shouldn't have new races, because obviously that's how a sport grows. But you know, the heartland of a championship is still the famous races people love. So I think this is something F1's going to probably have to like address head on at some point. You know, the interest is fantastic. Obviously, South Africa's talking about a race as well. Colombia would be great. I mean, that's, you can imagine that being an incredible race, you know, to attract fans to go to. There's been a lot of new races that have joined the calendar recently in great places that haven't maybe been the best Sunday spectacle. And I don't, maybe F1's not too fussed about that right now. But yeah, we seem to be reaching this point at the moment that I feel like we're on the edge of a precipice of this becoming a serious issue F1's got to kind of address head on. Whether I've always thought it'd be great to have rotating races. So, you know, you have a race in one calendar slot and it's like there's five races. We alternate between these races. I think it'd actually make it great season to season. You're like, we haven't been here for 5 years. We could, you know, you kind of forget what the circuit's like, etc. And at the moment, that's really the only way they're going to fit all of these races in, because there's only 24 spots in the rules that you can have at the moment. So, yeah. But I mean, I'd happily give up. I'm trying to think what I'd give up for Colombia. Maybe give up some of those. There's a few on there that maybe I'd be like, yeah, Colombia over that, definitely.
There's definitely a few. More than a few, I would say.
More than a few.
Willing to share right now on the record.
Qatar could go. Saudi could go. I mean, Saudi could definitely go, couldn't it? I'm trying to think of one outside the Middle East. I don't want it to seem like I've just put targets in the Middle East races.
I'm happy not going back to China. It looks like we may not be going back to China next year anyway, immediately. I'd happily not go back there.
Yeah. So there's definitely spaces, but it's just a lot of these races that we just mentioned are tied into incredibly long deals, coincidentally. So, interesting one.
Before we talk about not so great Sunday spectacles, as we recap the Mexico Grand Prix, last bit of news. Not sure if you saw it. Still within the world of motorsport. Did you guys see Ross Chastain in NASCAR and what was done?
Amazing. I think Fernando Alonso.
Is it amazing?
I mean, Fernando Alonso knows racing better than I do. And he said it was he said it was crazy and like a video game. And that is kind of like he put it on his Instagram. And a lot of the drivers in F1 have shared it. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know you could do that and not destroy the car. I just wouldn't have ever thought you could. So I don't know whether he knew that.
I'm not sure he knew that. Yeah. I think it was a real kind of experimentation. But it was one of those situations, nothing left to lose. So he just went for it.
And it's kind of I think it's opened up a bit of a debate kind of at the heart and soul of NASCAR about whether you can do that going forward. But I think we all love just that's like racing at its rawest, isn't it? It's just you go for it, and if it doesn't work, he could have looked like a complete fool if he'd just driven straight into the wall. Imagine if he'd just driven straight into the wall and the car had just been wrecked straight away. People were like, what are you doing? And it'd been like, yeah, in my head it looked great, but it just didn't come off. So yeah, full respect to that. It was awesome. Couldn't do it in a Formula One car, sadly, in the same way.
I would hope not. I would hope to never see that. But it did get NASCAR, obviously, trending for a variety of reasons because it was such a wild video to watch, no doubt. All right, let's recap the weekend that was, shall we?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
So I don't want to necessarily say that it was a snooze fest, but I'll let you guys describe it. And I know that we've hit a bunch of news that was as well. So with us not keeping people for more than an hour, I'll just toss it up to you. What stood out? What were your main takeaways from the weekend in Mexico?
I think we can say snooze fest before Lawrence starts. Snooze fest is fine.
Okay, I think that was fair.
But
yeah, it was close to being good. It just came down to because Mercedes were competitive, so it was close to having a genuinely exciting race. But Mercedes got the strategy wrong. Simple as that. They misread the way the tires would perform. Had they been on a strategy similar to Red Bull's or even a medium soft strategy, which is one that worked so well for Daniel Ricciardo, then it could have been a very different race and it could have been a closer race. But yeah, unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And you were like, come on, Max, you've got to make a second pit stop to make this exciting. Because I mean, Max still, even with a second pit stop, Max would have had a shot at victory, no doubt about it. You're like, come on, wouldn't that be great? Lewis v. Max going for the win. And then as the lap ticks away, you're like, oh, actually, that's not going to happen, is it? There's no way that's going to happen.
It's like three times now this year where we're like, Max v. Lewis again. It just hasn't happened.
Yeah, and it's also a sign of just how good Red Bull are operationally at the moment. Just everything is nailed down. And at the start of the race, I think if you talk to all the strategists, there was a bit of a risk there in what they were trying to do, but they stuck to what they thought was going to happen. They had a few kind of get out clauses potentially by either bringing in a second pit stop or putting on the hards at the second or the first stop, and they didn't either. They just stuck their guns and went for it. So that was impressive.
Just to shout out to Max as well, what we were talking earlier about disrespect, but one thing that's amazing about that performance with Max is a few people, I think Tommy from WTF1 pointed this out, so I don't want to steal the credit from him, but he saw the lap times of Verstappen. And if you look at Verstappen's lap times, he's on, Red Bull said to him, do a 1:22. If you actually see Max's times throughout that stint, it just shows you why Max is as good as he is. He is so good at just that relentless pressure. He's within a couple of tenths every single lap of where he needs, of where the team needs him to be to get that strategy. So as frustrating and as boring as it was one of those races that a lot of the times it's very easy to overlook. But the reason it was boring for the large part was because of Verstappen. You know, and Lewis made a lot of races like that when he was dominating. I'm sure Vettel did. I'm sure Schumacher did. And it's kind of one of the things that Drive to Survive doesn't show so much, I guess, is that when a driver's dominant, you get a few more boring races because ultimately they're right out the front. They're just doing their thing. But I think it was one of the worst races from an entertainment spectacle. But if you're talking about some of Max's best performances, there's a lot of ways come through the field this year. But that one stands out as just completely in a different league to everyone else, I think.
It was his 14th win of the season, beating Michael Schumacher and Vettel's record. It was his fourth Mexico Grand Prix win in 5 years. And he now has 416 drivers championship points, which beats Lewis' previous record of 413. So I don't know how you get more dominant than that.
And he's only 25. And he's seven races away from Senna on the all-time list. He's two-time world champ. I know statistics are a bit warped now because there's more races and stuff, but statistics are what they are. You know, we said it a lot during the Lewis spell. Like, we're just witnessing like a great, an all-time great, I think. In future, we'll look at him like that. So yeah, scary times. I just hope for F1's sake the other teams are closer, because otherwise we're going to get used to. I mean, we joke, don't we, at the end of all these pods, we're not going to predict Max winning anymore. But if you don't do that, it's not very good for your career prospects to start no. saying that Max isn't going to win, because he's just on a different level. So,
and we all like working together. But I do think it's interesting, Lawrence. You brought this up. You know, Ferrari, I think, all things considered, had a disappointing weekend. Carlos Sainz finished in fifth. Charles Leclerc finished sixth. You know, Mercedes is nipping at the heels, maybe, of, you could say, a Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship. But, you know, Mattia pointed out afterwards, you know, we're always getting ripped for our strategy. Why isn't Mercedes held to the same kind of standard? And you mentioned the tire strategy and the miss that Mercedes had in this Grand Prix. Do you think that's fair, that Mercedes maybe isn't called out, or as media isn't as critical of Mercedes as they have been of Ferrari this season?
I think everyone that watched that race, you know, realized that Mercedes had made a mistake. So, and I think it was said, I mean, I certainly wrote about it. So I'm not sure Mattia's got a great point there. The other factor being is that when Ferrari were making the mistakes, the championship was still very much on. They had a car that was consistently as competitive, if not more competitive, than Red Bull. And they threw away a bunch of opportunities, whereas Mercedes are coming back with a car that has been hugely uncompetitive relative to the front two for most of the year, and are now getting the odd shot at it and are taking gambles on strategy as well. So it's kind of a bit more understandable why Mercedes would be making these mistakes than why Ferrari was at the start of the year. So, yeah, I think he's got a point. But it's also one of those things of, it's just how difficult it is to beat a team like Red Bull that, as I just said, you know, so operationally spot on. How do you do that? So, but, you know, Ferrari were off the pace in Mexico, and that's partly down to their engine design. They have a smaller turbocharger, which at that altitude has to spin even faster to get the air into the engine. And so that kind of left them down on power. They then had to tweak other parts of the setup to reduce drag to try and keep a decent top speed. And then that led to other issues. So it was a really bad weekend for Ferrari in many ways. So I think maybe, talk about deflection earlier, maybe there's a little bit of that from Mattia. But I think Ferrari could have told you going into that race weekend, just because of physics essentially, and racing at that altitude, 2,250 meters, they were always going to be off the pace. So maybe it was a bit of that. And I hope that Ferrari are kind of back in a bit more for the final two races of the year, because really what we want to see next year, and we might not get it because Red Bull do look so good at the moment, but what we want for next year is those three teams, ideally more if any can join, all fighting for the championship. So it'll make it a lot more exciting to watch.
Nate, you're shaking your head.
I just thought, I think it was fair from Lawrence, but I think he was a bit too kind on Ferrari in terms of, you know, I think the reason people find those quotes, I find whenever I hear Binotto say that, or Carlos Sainz said it a few times this year, the reason people don't hold Mercedes to the same standard as Ferrari is because Ferrari haven't won the last seven championships or eight championships in a row. You know, they haven't won for so long. We've got so used to them just, you know, messing up. The story of the season's been they haven't been good enough. So when I hear Binotto say that, it really frustrates me, because there's a reason that we focus more on Ferrari doing that. It's because that's their kind of MO at the moment. They've been doing it for years. You know, something at Ferrari, every race seems to be wrong. And I include the drivers in that as well. You know, the drivers have let the team down a few times this season as well. So yeah, that's why if Mattia Bonotto is by any chance listening to this, or there's Ferrari fans listening to it who don't know why people don't hold Mercedes to the same account as Ferrari, you just have to turn a few pages back in the history books to look at it. I think Mercedes have earned a little bit of leeway when it comes to them. And we do, to be fair. I think when Mercedes made big mistakes when they were winning, they got absolutely roasted in the media. You know, the key difference with Mercedes was they always came back and then they won the next race, or they won the next 10 races or whatever. Ferrari don't seem to do that. They just seem happy to kind of, you know, complain that the media is not being fair to them. And I don't think that's fair at all, because, you know, we should. I know Red Bull seemed to have pulled away from Ferrari a lot this year, but it should have been so much closer. And that's all on Ferrari. So you can't say we haven't been giving them a fair shake of the stick, because we have.
Nate, a bulldog right now.
Yeah, I'm handing in my Ferrari membership, my Ferrari fan club membership card. This season has just done me in. I can't do it anymore.
Let's spin it. Don't go to a dark place just yet. Let's spin this positively. Daniel Ricciardo, after what was a very emotional post-race interview in Austin, finished seventh, even with a 10-second penalty. I was shocked by it. I don't want to say shocked. I was happy to see the performance that he put together on Sunday.
It's also frustrating because you know, you see the guy's still good enough. He's still got the potential. And part of it was down to strategy. Okay, his move on Sonoda was clumsy, but the raw pace was there. And you're like, come on, Daniel, where's that been for so long? And
it seems like
a bit like Monza last year. You know, just, he can do it, but he just can't do it consistently. Why not? I don't know what the answer is.
It does seem with Ricciardo, I don't know if there's something to this, but, you know, Monza, that he qualified well, got into lead turn one, and then he would have at one point come past Max's car, sat on top of Lewis. And I think he said afterwards that kind of kicked him into another gear. And I think the collision with Sonoda and just the penalty he got, and probably thinking like, ah, oh, you know, I should be on for a good result here. So like it almost kicked him into gear a little bit. Suddenly, you know, Lawrence is right. We suddenly saw this Danny Ric. And I always say to newer fans of Formula One, like back in his day, Danny Ricciardo was, you know, he was brilliant. Yeah, every race, especially at Red Bull, you know, he would be one of the guys, if the car was good enough, he could win the race. So it was great to see that. Obviously, it's far too late to save his kind of time at McLaren. But I'm glad we didn't just see him kind of going off into whatever the future holds for him without a performance like that. You know, he's got two more races to do something. But I did hear someone say something that I think is fair, is you can't start turning up to the paddock on a Thursday on a horse or whatever it is, and then underperform like you do in Austin. You know, I really like Daniel Ricciardo. He's one of my favorite drivers, best people to talk to in F1. But perception's a huge thing, you know, and I think it's good that people got to see that he can still drive and he still knows what he's doing. So, yeah, brilliant. And it deserved. Well, I think people were confused that you could kind of get a 10-second penalty and be driver of the day, but there was not much else going on in that race. So I think he kind of won it by default, but also it was good to see. So, yeah, awesome.
One last point that I wanted to ask you both about, you know, Fernando Alonso, as we mentioned at the top of the show, tried to diminish, I think, Lewis Hamilton's success as of late going into the weekend. And then he seemed pretty frustrated, you know, with the DNF due to mechanical issues. And, you know, he made some poignant comments about his current team. Just where do you feel like he's at? And is the frustration warranted at this point?
I think a key point you made there is current team, is that he's on the way out of that team. And it's amazing how honest drivers will become about their situation when they know they're going to a different team and somebody else can be paying them the following year. So I think that's part of it. But he's right. Like, if you look at Fernando's results this year, I saw somebody compile it on Instagram and put it in a post. And some of them are quite small, marginal, but they all add up. And some of them are huge. And he has lost a lot of points. I think, you know, if he finishes behind Ocon this year, he's currently behind him, his teammate in the championship. I don't think that's a fair reflection of how those two drivers have been or how good those two drivers are. So I get the frustration from Fernando's point of view. I do wonder whether it will be eased at all at Aston Martin next year. But, you know, I hope that he can click into there. But we also have this thing, you know, with him saying that Max's championships are worth more than Lewis's, and, you know, Max is worth more than Michael's. There's always this world according to Fernando Alonso. And it's from the world that I see, Formula One and the races that I see, there's always a slight departure. But you often get his point, but you don't necessarily agree with him. You know, that's where I feel with Fernando. But on the whole, kind of reliability issues and the Alpine not doing what it should do on a number of occasions, that's actually quite hard to argue.
Yeah, I think I Lawrence and I talk about Fernando Alonso all the time when we're driving into circuits. Like, I think he's fantastic for F1 for this exact reason. You know, if you were to say who are the three best drivers in F1, I'd say it's him, Max, and Lewis. So I think it's, you know, he should be up there in a better car. It's his fault he's not. I think we've talked about that before, kind of some of the mistakes he's made and stuff. But you need characters like this. I don't always agree with what he says. And I think that he's got this interesting trait right now. He'll say something very provocative and he immediately backtracks and says, no, people misunderstood me. You know, he said, and they see a few of them are aimed at Lewis. You know, there was Belgium when he crashed with Lewis. You know, it was a pretty clumsy move from Lewis, but Alonso said, this guy can only race out in front. And then 2 hours later, he's out of the car and he's saying, no, I didn't mean it like that. And I gave him the benefit of the doubt that time because I think radio quotes can be heat of the moment. They don't quite think about what they say. But this one, he was sat down with the Dutch media. He knew what he was saying. He knew it would. Well, maybe he didn't, but he should by now know that it's going to get to the wide, you know, it's going to get to the wider internet, the wide, you know, social media, etc. And yeah, he's a fascinating guy because I think he likes to craft his own narratives. You know, he thinks if I say this, everyone's going to believe what I think. I think next year, actually, I think that's one of the stories I'm looking forward to the most. Him having to be nice to the teammate who is the son of the guy paying him all this money to drive at Aston Martin, because traditionally, Alonso likes to kind of jab at his teammate where he can and just do them down ever so slightly to elevate himself. I don't think he's done it so much with Ocon this year, but if you look at what he used to say alongside Van Dorn at McLaren, for example, it was savage. He'd be like, this guy's meant to be brilliant and I'm absolutely wiping the floor with him. What's going on? Which sounded like a compliment until you read it and wrote it down. And, you know, it absolutely destroyed Van Dorn. You know, Alonso absolutely destroyed Van Dorn just kind of across the board. So I'm really looking forward to that for this exact reason. But I think, yeah, because if he's upset now, he's going to have to drive that Aston Martin around next year. And I don't think it's the best car. So, but yeah, I thought the Lewis comments were out of line. But Lewis responded to him in credit to him pretty well. You know, he didn't rise to the bait. And I think he's getting a bit. I think he said he had to giggle at it, I think was the exact quote. Yeah, so he clearly doesn't care too much. Yeah, which is what a lot of us did, I think. So, yeah, shared reaction just across Formula One.
Get some rest, as always. I appreciate you both. Back in action on November 13th at the Brazil Grand Prix. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're watching, if you're listening, remember, like this video, leave us a comment of what you want to hear and learn more about. Don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, of course, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Gentlemen, cheers. Thanks.